wait a minute, will you? Now, friends and neighbors, we're going to have a little chat with Mr. Jerry Smith. But before we do that, Mr. Smith, maybe we better get a level check. So would you like to name me some towns and cities in Ontario or Canada just for a level?
Well, there's Sudbury, North Bay, Sault Ste. Marie, Coniston. Let us say we have Toronto, Barrie, Owenstown.
Sounds reasonable. Let's go back and see what we got here. Now, friends and neighbors, we have another interesting guest on Memories and Music, Mr. Jerry Smith. Jerry, or Mr. Smith, retired on September 72 after 37 years with INCO at age 63, at which time he was the area engineer in the LAFAC area. Now, Mr. Smith, we know that you have quite a story to tell us back to your childhood days, so let's start there. Where are you from? Where's your hometown?
My hometown is in Strathcona, which is on the south banks of the Saskatchewan River and is now a part of the city of Edmonton.
Well, now, tell us about your parents. I believe you have quite a story about how your mother came to the West.
Yes, my mother and her mother, along with several of the daughters, left Parsborough, Nova Scotia, back before the turn of the century, and built their first home on White Avenue in the city of Strathcona. My mother was a teacher, graduated from Truro Normal School, and had her first school in Sweetgrass, Saskatchewan.
Now, don't go too fast, Mr. Smith. I think that's an interesting story. Now, let's just double-check that. Your grandmother and her family, that she is a widow at this time.
That's right.
Just packed up in Parsborough, Nova Scotia, and went out to Edmonton. Is that the way it happened? Would she have her sisters with her, too, or what was that story?
Well, that's a kind of an interesting part, too. There are ten girls in that family and one boy. Most of the girls became either nurses, graduate nurses, or school teachers. And this whole flock of young gals came out to make their future in the West.
I think that shows a real spirit of adventure. And this would be about around about 1895, is that right?
Around 1895, I would say we were pretty close to it.
Now, this would be... Now, when does this fit in with the Riel Rebellion and Northwest Rebellion out there?
Well, I would say they got here just after the Riel Rebellion, and Strathcona then started to becoming a stable town in itself. I might say that the home that they built was straight in the woods, and the road past it was a straight dirt road for wagons only, and at present, that area is a part of the complex of the University of Alberta.
You know, do you, Mr. Smith, see a group of women today, this is entirely hypothetical, it's hard to imagine them getting together, a group of, say, two or three sisters and a bunch of children and going out into what would be wilderness and setting up a home and starting a new life. I think that was an amazing pioneer spirit. Would you agree with that?
I would say so, but I think that their mother was a pioneer herself, coming from England and settling in Nova Scotia on approximately the same conditions as these people came out west with.
Yeah. But still, I think it very much to be admired and to be commended. Now, we have your mother then starting teaching school, which you said she did in Sweetgrass, Saskatchewan. I believe she went on to Olds, Alberta, and then your father came into the picture. Now, what was that story?
Well, the school that she had in out of Olds, Alberta, was in the foothills of the Rockies. My dad, he came from Lemon, South Dakota, from a big family of boys. And they had their log cabin in the foothills and were busy breaking wild horses. My mother was a teacher there, and she kind of threw a noose around him and dragged him up to Edmonton, or Strathcona at that time, and he became a plumber. And that carried him as a profession up until he went overseas in the First World War.
Well, now that's a story in itself, too. You know, breaking wild horses, these are things that we see on television and we think somebody's making up, but this really happened back in those early days. Now, getting back to you, Mr. Smith, you would then be born about what year?
1909, June the 23rd.
And then you would start school around about when? About 1914?
Roughly 14, just prior to the First World War.
Now, as you say, your father went overseas then with the Royal Engineers. Your mother and you and the rest of the family had to hustle around and keep going, to earn a few dollars to keep alive?
That's right. Six on a sergeant's pay was darn little to have to live on. So consequently, we had a cow, we had chickens, and a pig, and a garden. And it was our responsibility to look after these and provide the what we could to help make up the difference.
Great. Now, nonetheless, I believe that you, or at least you have told me, that you had a happy childhood.
We had a very happy childhood. We were knit together because we had knots in the way of games, etc. If we wanted to enjoy a better sport, we'd make our own merry-go-rounds or Ferris wheels. We would build our own tree houses, our log cabins or caves. We had the banks of the North Saskatchewan River to play on, or we had a line of cabins. Well, this is a little bit later in life, right up the Saskatchewan River. Swimming, we learned to swim in the river there. It's
now,
lucky we weren't drowned.
Speaking of swimming, you have some pretty vivid memories of a flood about that time, or was that a little later?
Well, that flood came, I would say, back in 1913 or 14 when the Saskatchewan River went into flood. The high-level bridge went across the river in 1911, and this flood came just after that bridge was built. And on the south side of the river was called Walters Flats. It is a straight lumber mill, and a lot of these small houses that didn't have basements or properly tied down floated down the river. And I recall seeing a barn coming down, and a cow was in it.
These are other things that really happened.
Yeah, and I remember the cow had its head out the window, and the barn hit one of the piers of this bridge as it went by.
I guess the cow could have swum ashore and probably did somewhere along the line, eh?
Well, either that or someone's going to have a cheap meat down the road at the river.
Well, now, speaking of that, Mr. Smith, you told a story, a good story, I thought, before, while we were chatting before this broadcast about, it may have become a little later than this, but about how there wasn't too much money in the family and how your father had an arrangement with a butcher in that area.
Oh, yes. In Edmonton, there was a butcher by the name of Nock, a German chap, that did 1/7 of all the meat business for the city of Edmonton. And his theory was that to sell meat, it had to be fresh. So every Saturday, he'd have an auction and auction off all this meat and start off Monday with a brand new, fresh, clean, killed meat. And Dad got to know this butcher very well. Of course, we were squeezing nickels in those days. And he was one of the come-on men, you might say, to improve the bidding on the meat. And this Mr. Nock would have him go and select the piece of meat that he would like. And then, when the bidding became dull, he would wink at my dad, and my dad would hold his piece of meat up and say, I would bid 25 cents for this. And this Nock said, sure, it's for 25 cents. just to get their business coming a little bit better. And Dad would come home at the end of the day with a box full of meat that would last us for the rest of the week. I might also say that he had two very good Jewish people on the south side of the end that run a fruit store.
Right.
And Dad would grind up his Model T Ford on the Saturday night and go down to visit these two lads that had this store. And, of course, for a fruit store, you'd have fruit that would not last over the weekend. And the first thing that Fred and John Morey would do was, Roy, we've got some fruit here. We've got to get rid of. We'll sell you the apples for 25 cents a case, or a string of bananas for $1. Well, again, Dad would come home with his car of his, full of all these goodies, and we would spend the next 2 or 3 hours sorting out the good from the bad, and the bad we would probably make applesauce of. But it was a very good part of our childhood days.
Mr. Smith, I think you have a great admiration and love for your father. I can tell it when you tell me this story. He was quite a man.
I would say yes. He's a fine fellow.
Well, now,
he was a terrific fellow. It was always a pride for us children to go downtown and be identified as Roy Smith's son.
Marvelous. Mr. Smith, when your father came back from the war, he ran into some problems with his plumbing business, I understand.
Yes, he had a partner in the business, and the partner sold all the tools. So he was without the necessary tools to carry on his trade. And at that time, cars were coming in, the old Model T Ford, and Dad became a mechanic and fixing up these cars. And he also ran a service station, which is one of the first in the city of, and south side of the city of Edmonton.
Great. Now, as for you, you had to hustle around about this time, when you started school, as you high school, as you did in the 20s, some more harvesting, things like that?
Yes, we had quite a varied experience when it came to work. First, we had a paper route. I think we had it in the family for around about 10 years, the Edmonton Journal. And we also had jobs out thrashing in the harvest fields, working as a construction laborer, general stores in northern Alberta. Any number of jobs. They didn't pay well, but the food was good.
Well, this was a pretty common experience throughout the West, and this brings up another point, Mr. Smith. This would be, we're getting into the late 20s, around 29-ish or thereabouts. Social credit, it seems to me. That became quite a thing out there. What are your memories of social credit?
Well, prior to social credit, we had other forms of government I wouldn't go into, and they got into a certain amount of disgrace, either politically or socially, and Eberhardt came out of Calgary with a new philosophy and called social credit. And with this, he had what was called his hot money. You wouldn't recall this type of an endeavor, but it was a piece of paper, and that every day you held that piece of paper, you had to affix a stamp to it, so that as long you held it, the more less that money was less value there was in that money. Something like our money today, you might say, where it where a dollar's only worth about 50 cents.
What was the point of it? I mean. Did you get paid in Alberta, government of Alberta, social credit money, or how did that work out?
Yes, you got paid a certain percentage of this in this hot money. And of course, the first thing you did was to pay the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker and get rid of this this money before you had to put stamps on it. Because it certainly wasn't something you want to hold, and money really changed hands very rapidly in those days.
Well, and that kept things moving. It kept the wheels of business turning.
Yes, but the people in Ottawa decided that it wasn't up to the provinces to make their own money. Right. That was their jurisdiction.
Interesting, Mr. Smith. That's a sidelight that certainly some of our younger listeners probably never even heard of. Now, when did the Eberhardt money sort of stop or cease or go out of existence?
Well, it lost its popularity, I might say, very rapidly with the people. But there's one thing that did come out of social credit. Under Manning, who came after Eberhardt, was very good government. Of people of all walks of life that were sincerely interested in the welfare of the province.
Well, it's good to hear that, too. Now, Mr. Bennett Buggies, or something you were telling us about earlier.
Bennett Buggies, that was back when R.B. Bennett was coming up for election in 1935. And at that time there, he had put in one stint of government, and the Depression had hit, and people could no longer afford to drive cars. So he took the motors out of these cars and changed them over to a two-horsepower deal. And they were horse-drawn. They were called Bennett Buggies. It's kind of interesting, you know, with this man Stanfield coming up with his underwear. I do hope he puts a bit of wool in them.
Well, we can assume that he will, Mr. Smith. Now, you were told us earlier that you did manage to go to the University of Alberta, studied chemical engineering, and then went on, I think, to Regina. Now, there were some interesting circumstances about when you arrived in Saskatchewan or in Regina.
Well, just going back to university, depression was on, and I think there are two things that put me through university. One was my mother and father, and secondly was the depression. You could get work in the summertime, but the winter was another problem. Consequently, we earned enough money to put ourselves through with the help of our parents. Now, Don mentioned the stint after I graduated. My first job was on a geological survey party in southern Saskatchewan. And I landed in Regina the day after the RCMP broke up beyond to Ottawa.
March,
that's right. And the city was really devastated. One policeman was killed, and the thing was that here was a group of people that were gathering into this one main central area, and through transportation on cattle trains or freight trains, they were on their way to Ottawa to ask for and demand work, not handouts, but work.
Yes, it seems a very different time now in many ways. Mr. Smith.
Very much so. They have their plagues now with their hands out, and they certainly don't want to get them dirty.
Well, we won't go into that on our show here, but we now, after completing this geological survey in and around the southern Saskatchewan, you hopped aboard a freight train yourself. Is that not right, sir?
Well, that's right. I was very fortunate. I had this job on this survey party, and I was able to amass the fortune of, I think it's $360 for my summer's work. And without any future in the West, as far as my profession or assumed profession, I decided to leave with another chap named Jock Cameron. And we got a passage on a cattle train out of Edmonton, and my mother made me up a great big pail full of sandwiches and chicken and etc. And away we went to beat the world. It took us a week to work our way through to Toronto. I remember going across the Don Valley there and adding to the pollution in the area by dropping this pail over the side of the bridge and into the Don Valley.
Well, what kind of reception did you get in Toronto?
Toronto, I never ran into such a bunch of stiff-necked people in my life. When you're going from ask from a job and you stand there with your hands in front of you, more or less pleading for a job, they'd look up and I would swear they saw straw coming off the back of my neck or something because the reception wasn't good.
So you moved on from Toronto?
Went over to Montreal for a week and looked around there and stayed with a French family. And the atmosphere and the warmth in that particular area was terrific. I might say that E.A. Collins was up here in Coppercliff, and he had an administrative position, a top administrative position with the company. My brother was here also, working in the mines, and he suggested I write a letter to this Mr. Collins with the idea of getting employment, which I did, and I met Mr. Collins and found him a terrific man. He didn't offer me a job in the executive position, but he suggested I had a job for me out at Prudent Mine on the end of a muck stick. I didn't know what that was, but I figured it must be pretty good. And I had my first introduction to the hard knocks of mining.
Very good. And how long were you with that, sir?
1 month. I mean, they didn't fire me at the end of that month, but they gave me an opportunity to get in the engineering department, where I stayed for quite a number of years.
Now, Mr. Smith, we have you in Sudbury. You have left Edmonton, and you have sort of worked a cattle train down to Toronto and Montreal. You've come to Sudbury. You started to work on a muck stick. Now, tell us your memories of Sudbury of that era when you're a young fellow just first here.
Well, Sudbury was a mining town, and mining town was a very boisterous place to be in. They had their gambling joints, their blind pigs, and their houses of ill repute. It's kind of interesting. I got a room, with a boarding room, over on 89 Pine Street. A woman by the name of Mrs. Lewis ran this, and quite a number of my new associates came there for the meals. I was lucky. I had a half a bed in that apartment, and I shared it with a chap that I was not introduced to for the whole week that he was there. At the end of the week, there's a decision of whether he's going to stay or I. So he left because I was the more pauper one.
All right, Mr. Smith, we're into the middle 30s in Sudbury. We've got you settled in here. You've got you working at your trade, as it were, in the engineering end of it. And something very interesting happened around about 1940, I am told. Now, what was that story?
Well, I think traveling is in my blood, and this particular holiday, I decided to take a trip down in the Caribbean on a banana boat. And we visited Cuba, Jamaica, and Honduras, and picked up a big load of bananas in Honduras. On this boat, there were about 40 passengers. One was this beautiful young lady that was working with the Woman's Day magazine in New York. And her position was testing the recipes prior to publishing them in this particular magazine. I'm kind of fond of food and a good-looking young lady. So we became very, very good friends. And once we landed back in New York, she invited me up to the house for a steak dinner, and of course that just fell right in line with my thinking and appetite. She also took me to the World's Fair that was going on at that time, and to reciprocate, I invited her up to Sudbury in August, and at that time we became engaged, and later married Yeah. On payday, on November 8, 1940.
Mr. Smith, I think that you keep your wits about you, too, as you have through the years. Now, what... you told me earlier that your wife's first impression of Sudbury, or at least come winter, wasn't the best, but that she's since become very fond of it up here.
That's right. I remember the first winter we put in at 99 Douglas Street, and of course you had a walk downtown, and there was a kind of a windy walk there, and she didn't think that it was the same in the wintertime as it was in the summer when I sold her the idea of coming up here to live. But as time went on and friendships grew, I think now that she is one of the greatest promoters for Northern Ontario.
Well said, sir. Now, have you any family, Mr. Smith?
Yes, we have three children.
What are their ages? Where are they? What are they doing?
Well, my wife says that I can never keep a birthday or an age in my head. So I'm just guessing that my oldest, Ken, is around about 31 years of age. He is now in Toronto, successfully in the advertising business, and living in a new home in Oakville. He and his wife are blessed with three children, and they're doing very well in this new area. Doug, the next one, is around about 26, 27, and... after his formal education in Sheridan Tech and also out in Mount Royal in Calgary, he decided he wanted to expand his field and spent 2.5 years over in London and with trips to through Western Europe and into North Africa. He's back in Sudbury now and is working as a daycare worker in the Algoma Sanatorium, working with children, which he likes the best.
And the daughter, what's her name and what's she doing?
Heather is the daughter. And she's around about 24 years of age, graduated from McMaster University in social service work and psychology. She's now working for the Children's Aid Society and is a swinger in her own rights.
Well, now, about yourself, Mr. Smith, what have you any hobbies or anything like that?
Yes, I've had developed several hobbies. One is photography, which I enjoyed very much, and another one was working with the YMCA, and I found that children and growing children have a lot to offer anyone who will take the time with them. I had a group of Hiawai students during the war. I think there were 35 in number, and I would say that practically every one of them is successful either in their own trade or in their own profession. And it's certainly very gratifying to run into these chaps on the street and talk about the old times. I also had a hockey team called the Tiger Hockey Club, and I think it had around about 40 or 50 young lads in this group. From grade 1 up to grade 8. We just taught them the rudiments of hockey, and I might say that we would have around about 85 to 90% attendance at all these get-togethers.
Very, very good, sir. You're, it would appear, and certainly is a fact.
Right now...
community-minded. All right, what are you going to say?
Right now, sailing is my hobby. I built this boat, the 21-foot sloop, back quite a number of years, and taught the children how to sail, or they taught me, but I know that I got wet quite a number of times. Right now I'm trying to get the thing back in the water for the summer. It kind of reminds me of last summer when I decided to take two other retirees out, George Burwash and Carl Heidman, and the wind was kind of dull this particular day, and they weren't too good sailors themselves, but I thought I'd taught them fairly well. Coming into dock, the wind had died down, and I decided that I could bring the boat in with the sails up. But a gust of wind came and started to drive us onto the dock. I grabbed a hold of a post to stop it, and it pulled me out into the lake, and here I was swimming around trying to explain to these two duffers how to launch the boat, how to moor the boat, and it was most embarrassing.
How did it work out? Did they get it moored?
No, but I'm still patching the front of the boat.
If they are listening to this broadcast, they may have some comments to make, Mr. Smith. I hope they call you.
Yes.
Now, friends, as you may have gathered, we've been having quite a chat today with Mr. Jerry Smith, who retired in September of 72 after 37 years with International Nickel. Age 63 at the time, he was the area engineer for the Levac area. Now, Mr. Smith has told us a story dating way back to a childhood in Strathcona, just one in what village of Strathcona, in what is now the city of Edmonton. And you will recall, told us a most interesting story about his mother and grandmother coming west as they did in a pioneer sort of way to start a new life and building their own house and creating that new life out in the west. Now, Mr. Smith, you're a man who has seen a good deal of life. You have pretty definite opinions in many areas. You've been able to adapt. You've had seen good times and bad times. Have you got a philosophy, anything you would tell a young fellow?
Well, a philosophy is a thing that you can eulogize on, but there are two things that developed a philosophy in my life, and that is the Robert Service's poems and also Rudyard Kipling's poem called If. Now, if you want my philosophy, kindly read them.
Fair enough. We can't ask better than that. Now, one other thought, sir. We often ask, I take it, that having seen Bermuda and Cuba and the Edmonton and everywhere else, you're a pretty dedicated northerner now. Is that right, sir?
Very much so. I think that Sudbury has, over the years, with our family growing up here, has contributed a great deal to their success. And I think that Sudbury has all that's required to bring up a good, healthy family.